Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry, where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.
Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world. Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to today's show on World Spirituality. I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Unity Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Today I'm joined by healer, author, and teacher of shamanism. And she may need to call us back on Skype maybe because I'm getting a lot of interference here. She's, like I say, a teacher of shamanism on the Egyptian. Okay.
I tried to reach you on Skype earlier and couldn't do it.
All right, we're live right now, so let's just persevere then. All right.
Can you hear me?
It's always interesting, folks, isn't it? Always interesting where these shows go. Okay, her books include Alchemical Healing, Shamanic Mysteries of Egypt, The Anubis Oracle, and a new book, which is the subject of today's show, and it's called Sekhmet, Transformation in the Belly of the Goddess. Nikki Scully is the founder of Shamanic Journeys Limited, which specializes in spiritual tours of Egypt. And from her home base in Oregon, she offers retreats, private sessions, and tele-seminars. So it's a pleasure to welcome Nikki Scully to today's show. Welcome.
Thank you, Paul. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, we'll work through these glitches of the sound. It's probably not as bad to our listeners, I hope, as it was for me a little bit ago. That's fine. Sorry for that rocky start there, listeners, but I think we're moving ahead. Before we delve into the book, though, first of all, Nikki, tell us who Sekhmet is and her significance, sort of, because some people may not know. What is this?
Okay, Sekhmet is the lioness-headed woman goddess of Egypt. She is the feminine face of the sun. Her name means power or mighty one, and she is the one who is the guardian of Ma'at, which is both the concept and the balance, or the concept and the goddess of balance, truth, justice, and cosmic law. So when things get out of whack like they are now, Sekhmet's called in to make it right. And according to her myth, the first time it happened, she went on a murderous rampage and practically killed the entire human species. So she's changed her ways now and is doing it in a way that heals people and prepares them to work together to change things on the planet, which we desperately need as fast as we can. So this is the fastest form of transformation. It could be called design mutation, actually, to go through this process. But it's a commitment. It's a very deeply shamanic commitment.
There's many correspondences for me with some of the Hindu goddesses, you know, like Durga, who also rides on a lion, right? And Kali, yeah, exactly. These aspects, these sort of terrifying aspects of the divine that bring balance, but then they have a Pacific side too, you know, like Parvati or Saraswati, you know, the goddess of learning and everything. So it's this idea that sometimes the forces of the universe are very powerful, aren't they? Hence the name, you know, Durga means the invincible one too. We have to have those energies, and they're all around us, you know, the volcano is about to erupt in Bali, for instance, you know, right. And in all the various essences that are going on in our world right now, and some of the craziness, yeah, balance must be restored, right? Because order is God's first law, as they say. You know, there will be balance, and if we throw ourselves off kilter, then we got to expect there's going to be a redressing of that.
There's going to be consequences. The thing with Sekhmet is she's also known as the quintessential healing goddess of Egypt.
Yes.
So she plays both those roles. She can bring on the plague, but if you get the plague, it's her that you call to her bedside to heal you.
Which is a spiritual law, isn't it? Like cures like, you know, it's not the idea that we have to have something different to solve the problem. The solution is the kernel of the solution is right in the midst of the problem, in other words.
Right. Right. And when if you take on the way this book is written, it is one alchemical process divided into 22 shamanic journeys. And in that process, well, the first part of the book is devoted to the preparation so that you can bring into your consciousness all the things that you need to change in yourself in order to have the integrity, the perception and discrimination to make the right decisions. And once you have identified all those things and to do that, you tie knots. And what's interesting is my Egyptologist told us that in rural Egypt, they still do that today. So it actually has validity in Egypt as far back as lore goes, that they use this kind of alchemy in order to create healing, to change things, and of course also for revenge. But we are absolutely focused on healing. And when you tie those knots and you prepare your offering for Sekhmet, you also are preparing to meet her face to face, and she will not only devour your offering, she will devour you. And so you get to go through shamanic death, disintegration, the complete breaking down of your ego and yourself down to your absolute essence, after which you pass through the eye of the needle, so to speak, and then together you and Sekhmet co-create your future self as the adult child of this goddess, fully prepared with the courage and the discrimination that you need to always speak the truth and to stand up for what's right and to become part of a much larger community of people that are working towards regaining the balance that we've lost in this very perilous time.
Yes, and it's very frightening, though, isn't it, to abandon yourself or be swallowed by the larger reality. You know, we want to hold on to our ego and our self-identification. So it's tough to do that. You know, it's funny you should be talking about this, because just before the show, I was reading from the Bhagavad Gita, and it said in this passage, it's very apropos, I think, it says, a more formal practice of discipline is okay, a clear intellectual understanding is better, and then such understanding in meditation is even better than that, and even better than meditation is the abandonment of the fruits of action. For such abandonment of the fruits of works and the sense of their agency is immediately followed by peace. And this is what we're talking about, isn't it? Abandoning ourselves. It's not like we're giving up hope or anything like that. It's we're abandoning our false identification with something in order that we can take on something larger, right? Something greater, which is the, you know, imaged in the beautiful form of Sekhmet in this tradition, right? So we're abandoning ourselves to something greater within ourselves.
Well said. And because we live in a culture where shamanism is not supported and accepted, those people that are having spontaneous shamanic experiences often think they're crazy, or the people around them think they're crazy, and there is no support. But the actual term shaman comes from the Tungus peoples of Siberia and Central Asia, where the calling for the shaman was insanity. And if you didn't respond, you would become insane.
Right.
And if you did, you would become responsible. So the commitment here is to recognize, remember, and be willing to take on that responsibility of proper stewardship of ourselves, care for each other, and stewarding the planet in an appropriate way.
Right, and I think, you know, the danger here is that, as in anything, you know, we can spiritualize our egos, can't we? And we can appear to be making this abandonment, but really we're not doing it in divine order. We're doing it to serve our lower nature. So we have to guard against that, because I think this is some of the problems we have with leaders that, you know, start to believe their own publicity. They may have had an awakening, a breakthrough, but their ego is still there. The seed of it is still there. And the adulation of a devotee, if you like, inspires them to you know, rekindle it, instead of seeing that it's not really about me, it's about the spirit that flows through me. So I think we have to be careful that we don't, because, you know, we can't just go crazy, right? There's got to be some kind of balance to our nuttiness.
Oh, absolutely. But the thing with these pantheons is that they already exist in us. They're in our DNA.
Exactly.
So what we're doing is we're awakening a part of ourselves that already exists, that's been ignored or abandoned for sometimes centuries, sometimes millennia, because there were so many diasporas and genocides and reasons for people to get to lose the continuity with their ancestors. And so that has to be rebuilt. And that's all part of the putting yourself back together. I mean, if you commit to this work, well, the first thing you do is you have to get over the fear, because most people, especially if they don't have a lot of shamanic experience, the idea of being eaten by a lioness goddess is can be frightening. So one of the first journeys is to deal with fear. And once you've established how to face and conquer your fear from the perspective of a lioness who is at the top of the food chain and a very good teacher for that sort of thing, then when you have that trust and you willingly commit and give yourself to the process, then you spend the next while until you complete the process living in two worlds at least simultaneously. And there's a lot that you can learn from that. I mean, there's a reason why Ganesh has all those arms.
Right.
You know,
there's a lot to do.
and exactly. And so you learn why making relationships with these ancient aspects of yourself from this culture that was considered to be so far superior in some ways, and yet it was truly a shamanic culture. There's actually scholarly written evidence of that since Jeremy Nadler published a book called Shamanic Wisdom in the Pyramid Text, where he describes how those instructions were written for the living pharaoh rather than for the dead one. And that changes everything.
Yes.
Because the living pharaoh, if he did those rites and initiations, then he would have direct contact to source. And if he led an enlightened rulership using that direct access to source, then you would have an enlightened reign. And if you get somebody in there that is in it for the power, well, then everything falls until somebody works their way back in that remembers and brings it back to how it was meant to be. But eventually,
so you like?
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so following up on that, you like to open with a heart breath meditation, right? When you do the work, there's got to be some preparation here, so that
Absolutely. We
are stepping into it in an impeccable way that both protects us and safeguards us from some of these extraordinary energies that are going to arise within us and around us as a result of doing this work. So tell us a little bit about the heart breath.
I'll tell you about the heart breath, and if you like, I'll take people through it and give them an introduction to Sekhmet, so
okay.
that they can meet her more loving aspect and not have that fear, because there's really no safer place than you can be than inside the belly of the top of the food chain. And the perspective from there is really quite interesting, because you have access to her mind and to her sensitivities. And with that access, you actually gain them, because she knows which of your offerings need to be released as scat, which need to go to increase strength or courage or the various parts of you and of her. And so it's a shared experience. Plus, I have a forum for people that are working it so that they can, you know, talk to each other about what they're going through, and then I'm always accessible. That's the one commitment that I've made, is if people are doing this work, I will be accessible to help them.
Right, good. Because we need guides, right, to help us through.
Well, it's pretty clear, but some people are more comfortable with guides. So, you know,
right.
All of my books are dues. You know, they're all, like, you can self-initiate to become a healer. And if you want to go deeper, then you can find a teacher of that work and you know, people to practice with. But would you like me to teach people the heart breath and take them for a quick introduction to Sekhmet?
Of course, yeah, that would be great. And we have a break in about 10 minutes or so. So have we got enough time to do this process?
Maybe we should do it on the way back. Maybe we should do it as soon as we get back so that we're not so rushed.
But okay.
I will try and do it in 10 minutes anyway. But, you know, just so people know what they're looking for, the statue that the cover of the book was painted from has been for 3,500 years in a little chapel in Karnak, off to the side, where most tourists never see it. And it's made of black granite. It's about 8 or 9 feet tall. And it's a woman's body wearing a sun disk with the cobra Uraeus in the at her forehead, in front of the sun disk. And I've led myself more than 60 trips to Egypt since I first went with the Grateful Dead in 1978. But I didn't start taking groups till 1989.
Right.
And in that time, we always ask people, you know, what brought you to Egypt? And then at the end, we always ask them, now what do you think brought you to Egypt? And almost to a person, once they have gone and stood in front of that statue and felt its aliveness, and they know that they were called by Sekhmet. And because this is her time, because things are so out of balance right now. And just, it's scary what could happen on the planet if we don't somehow find our voices, our true voices, and bring back that balance. So that, you know, should be everybody's priority, I think. Even though survival seems to be most people's priority these days, and that's for good reason. It keeps us from doing the work.
Well, you know, Jesus talked about this, didn't he? You know, he's talking about the end times or the completion of a cycle until a new cycle starts. You know, the people are just going about their business, oblivious to what's really going on. And I think that's the way it is. You know, there's a sort of a complacency. Nobody's really paying attention. And it seems as the stakes get higher, there's more and more distractions, you know, that keep us mesmerized, if you like, or in a trance. And so really it's just the way it happens on planet Earth, I think, is that remarkable things could be happening, and yet we're not aware of them until later, until the shift has happened. But if we're on the cutting edge or on the head of the wave, you know, we are aware, aren't we, that there's momentous things. And I think there's a lot of people on the planet right now who are aware of these, the necessity for this shift. And it's sad to see people playing games with it, you know, playing a foolish, unfortunately, we, you know, even at the highest levels of our society here in our political power in here in America, you know, we get some stuff that you think, really? Is that really helping us? certain comments. And this isn't a political show, so I'm not going to go into that. But but it does shock you sometimes. You think, wait a minute, am I a fool here, or am I seeing something? You know, I don't know. It's difficult. But it's always been the few and the one or two that have shifted this planet, right? It only took Buddha and Jesus, two great personages, to shift the thought atmosphere, and I'm sure that's true in other traditions too. You know that it's okay. You know, one person can make a huge difference.
One person can make a huge difference, but when we get together, the exponential power of our numbers is so great that the doing the work and finding the community and enlarging that community, like I do a lot of free planetary healing calls to action, and where we, you know, go on Zoom or on Skype and do work for the planet and try and enlarge that community so that, and the same with the Sekhmet work, so that the people can find each other and then work together in larger and larger circles. And HeartMath has already measured it. They know that when we have these world meditations, that there's more peace, there's less arrest, everything changes. And they also know that you can measure when something really heavy is coming before it comes. And so we, you know, a lot has to do with paying attention and and keeping ourselves as conscious as possible, as much of the time as possible.
Right, exactly.
So that we're part of a much larger community. I mean, the Mahatma Gandhis and the Jesuses are just too rare, and they don't have to be. Anybody can do it. They just have to do the work and then find ways to create community of like minds.
Because the interesting thing about personages like Mahatma Gandhi or Martin Luther King Jr. is that they take on a sort of an aura of, they represent a lot of the qualities that we would like to exhibit at our higher levels, right? So in and of themselves, they may not be quite as remarkable as a person as they seem to be, because they've been mythologized, right? So they carry the energy that we would like to see move to, you know, at the next level of energy and unfoldment in consciousness. So I think that's encouraging, because it's not that they're alone. They represent, if you like, that next shift. And that encourages me, because, you know, it's not like, oh, I could never be these people. Well, maybe they weren't that special, actually, because, you know, we know that Mahatma Gandhi had a lot of tics, and so did Martin Luther King.
Right.
So, but they represented, you know, they represented something for us that we can now aspire to. And I think it's the same with Jesus did the same thing. You know, I mean, he's not just the one deity, is he? He's a representative of the possibility for Christedness in everyone, and this is what you're talking about, of course, that we embody all these qualities, and therefore that's why we have to be eaten, if you like, by Sekhmet, you know, because we're dissolving our foolishness. You know, in the Bible it says that our God is a consuming fire, and a lot of people fear that. Oh, no, God's a consuming fire. But really all that means is God consumes the dross, right, so that we end up being pure gold, you know. So
exactly.
it's only the dross that gets consumed in the fire.
If I could make one more point before break. Our subconscious mind does not distinguish between a vision, a dream, our imagination, and true 3D experience. So the way alchemical healing or shamanism often works is that you have an experience, and if you feel a spider sewing up an internal cut inside your body, if you feel all those little feet and you feel the squirting of the medicine and the binding of the weaving of the web that's going to hold it all together, then your body reacts as though that actually happened, because it's your subconscious mind that's running things, and your subconscious mind believes what it experiences. So that's why these kinds of shamanic journeys are so important, because as you develop and learn how to do it through practice, then, you know, that's why healing happens so fast in alchemical healing. Because if you feel a cobra come inside you and eat a tumor, well, that tumor is going to die.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's going to disintegrate. And so the more sensitive you are and the more you develop those sensitivities, the more capable you are of doing this work in a way that actually you experience the difference as it's happening.
Beautiful. I love it.
Can't go back, because you know.
Well, and why not have your own
choice?
Why not have your own dream rather than buying into somebody else's dream, you know, called television or the media or the you know, all the things that go on that we say are reality? They're no more real, are they, than anything else,
right.
You know. In fact, they're quite unreal in some ways. So,
yeah.
You know, it's better to come to the truth of our being than be distracted by outer events, you know. So,
and
powerful stuff.
Maps. These are maps that get you there.
Yes, very good. All right, well, folks, I'm with Nikki Scully. She's an author and a healer. She's written this new book called Sekhmet, Transformation in the Belly of the Goddess. It's published by Bay & Company, but of course you can get it in all the usual outlets. She leads people on journeys to Egypt. And when we come back, she's going to lead us on a journey. She's going to set the parameters around a breath, heart breath meditation, and lead us into a visit with Sekhmet herself, which will be fascinating. So join us in a couple of minutes after these messages from Unity. All right, see you soon. Bye-bye.
Wouldn't you like to share the programs that inspire you most with audiences around the world? That's easier than ever with mobile giving. Just text Unity Radio to 72727 and help us continue offering spiritual programs that change lives.
If you've ever wondered how a specific Bible verse might be interpreted metaphysically, then Interpret This is for you. In Interpret This, Unity Minister Reverend Ed Townley answers your questions about the Bible and how to apply its verses to your life with passion, depth, and spiritual insight. To submit a question or to enjoy any of his numerous metaphysical interpretations, visit unity.org and click on the Interpret This box.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to today's show. I'm with Nikki Scully. We're talking about her book, Sekhmet, Transformation in the Belly of the Goddess. And we're going to be gifted with a time of a guided meditation leading us into the halls of Sekhmet. And we're going to meet her. And so Nikki's going to lead us. And this will go on for about 10 minutes. So, folks, if you've got 10 minutes to sit quietly and participate in this beautiful healing practice, give yourself that gift right now. So, Nikki, lead us in, if you would.
Okay. So, if you're driving, please pull over and park. And then all of my work starts with the heart. Everything's threaded through the heart. So, take a moment to just focus on your heart center and find the eternal flame that lives within your heart center. And as you bring that flame into focus, feed it with love. Love is the fuel. Notice how your flame brightens and intensifies. And then you begin by reaching down with your consciousness to the heart of the earth. the as close as you can get to the molten core at the center of the earth, and begin to inhale that vitality, the energy, the power from the heart of the earth. And as you're inhaling it up through the earth, you're picking up the various elements, the earth, water, fire, and air, and all the ways that they manifest themselves, gemstones, minerals, all the way up to roots and plants and trees, and then up into your body to your heart. And once it gets to your heart, you'll hold your breath for a moment while you continue, while it mixes with the love that you're continuing to pour on your flame. And then when you exhale, it goes from your heart in every direction through your body, awakening every cell and molecule in your being. And so it takes a minute to get that rhythm down so that you can do it in one inhale. And you inhale, mix it with your love, hold it, and then and notice what that feels like. Now reach up with your consciousness to the heart of the cosmos and begin to draw down with your breath the intelligence of all the celestial bodies and beings that would support us with this work. And also the field of consciousness in which we are suspended. And you draw that intelligence down through your crown, down to your heart center, where it mixes with the love that you're pouring on your heart flame. And then exhale that out in every direction and notice what that feels like. Now simultaneously breathe from earth and sky as though you're using your breath like bellows. And so you inhale from earth and sky at the same time. Hold your breath while it mixes with the love that you continue to pour on your flame. And then release it in every direction. Inhale again from earth and sky. Hold your breath while it mixes with your love. And then exhale in every direction. Now this next time, inhale from earth and sky. And while you hold your breath as it mixes with your love, make the intention so that as you exhale, your heart fire connects with the heart fire of the person nearest to you that's listening to this call. And then it just goes, and all our heart fires are connected. And because this goes out pretty much internationally, I would imagine that it's a rather large glow that we're creating. So each breath makes it brighter and larger until in the center of that glow where we're all connected, you see a dot. And with each breath, that dot grows until it becomes an eye, like the Egyptian eye of Horus or eye of Ra. In this case, the eye of Sekhmet. It would be a right eye. And you feel yourself being drawn toward the pupil. And then allow yourself and continue breathing the heart breath the whole time. Allow yourself to pass through the pupil, and you're going to find yourself standing in a little room in a chapel in Egypt with this huge statue of the goddess, this black granite statue, a woman's body with a lion's head. She's holding a staff with a papyrus flower in her left hand and the Ankh in her right. And you want to walk right up to her and look her right in the eyes. And you'll see her eyes become like glowing rays of sunshine, of liquid sunshine. And greet her, and she'll greet you. She's really happy to see you. And you'll feel a paw or a hand on your heart. And suddenly there's this surge of energy as her courage and her power and the strength of who she is passes into you and moves through your circulatory system and goes through your whole body. And it awakens a memory of this being that already lives inside of you. And just allow yourself to feel her awaken in you. And she begins to speak to you, and you may hear her through thought or through words or through images, or she may take you on an experience. So just allow yourself to receive from her what she wants you to know right now. And she wants me to let you know that if you have any places of pain or injury, if you put your attention on them right now, that liquid sunshine from her eyes will go into your body through your eyes and reach down into those places of pain or weakness or injury and bring healing that will continue even after we come back. So I think our 10 minutes is about up. She'll keep working on the healing. Be sure and thank her. And receive whatever gesture or blessing she gives. And then you're going to feel yourself being drawn back through the eye to wherever you're sitting or lying down or driving your car or parking your car. And be sure and ground and center yourself fully before you attempt to walk or drive. You know, wiggle your fingers and toes. Breathe in through the small of your back and exhale down into the earth to ground yourself. And make sure you're solidly back in your body. So, Paul, were you able to take the journey?
Yes, very nice, very beautiful. Yeah, I was. It's always lovely to go into that that inner sanctum, you know, and become aware of the energies that are there. And I'm not an Egyptologist myself. That's not my my particular path. You know, I'm more Hindu and Buddhist or whatever, but these energies are one, of course, aren't they? They're universal, and so, you know, I feel a resonance there when I was in that space to temples I've been to in India where you go into the the inner sanctum, you know, the Holy of Holies, and see the images in there. And, and as you say, representing the subconscious realms within us all, and those amazing energies of the universe that are always available.
Did she feel familiar to you?
Yes. Yeah, there was a familiarity. You're right. And it felt very comforting, actually. That was the image I got, even though the person in she was very strong. There was a gentleness to it as well, you know, infinitely tender, it seems.
Right. That's the thing that people don't realize. There's so much fear around this goddess whose myth is so horrifying, but then you have to realize when and who translated it and how they didn't quite get it right, because in part of the myth is that in order to get her to stop killing people, they tricked her by making beer look like blood, as though a goddess couldn't distinguish the difference between beer and pomegranate juice.
Right.
Or rather, between blood and pomegranate juice beer.
Right. Yeah.
I think the other thing that we need to realize, that from the 30-some years that I've been studying these deities, is that we're all growing. We're all learning. There's nothing static. They're evolving just as we are.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, go ahead.
I was going to say, I want to cover some of the ground towards the second part of the book, too, to give people a flavor for that, because having contacted the goddess and whatnot, you talk a lot about reframing, rebuilding, rehabilitating, deepening our awareness of various parts of our body, whether it be our bones or our brains, and other structures, meridians, etc., our ears and eyes and nose and all that. So it's a full healing of who we are, right, basically?
It pretty much covers everything.
Right.
It goes through all the network of your nervous system and your endocrine system, and she gives attention to pretty much every part of you, and because you're inside her and with her, you're working together. And they put your brain back together in a new way to help enhance the neocortex, because we've barely learned how to use it, and to realign things that have gotten out of whack from being injured or from just the toxic environment in which we live. She works on there's one journey where you go out into the desert, and the white desert, which is made of limestone, has all these incredible configurations. It's a very well illustrated book, so you get to see everything. And you can see how these strange shapes that grow out of this desert look like your spinal column. And my friend who went into the desert, who had a vision quest and had this journey happen to her, describes it as though she realized that desert was made of the bones of the ancestors, and we're going back to when it was an ocean and there were whales and there were fish, and so all of those things becomes part of you, because you put back the puzzle of your spinal column with the help of Sekhmet. And it's whether you're working on your brain or your spine or your meridians, it's fun. It's not just work. It's fascinating because it's unique and it's joyful and it's different.
Right. Fascinating. Interesting you should mention fish and whales and that. You know, it reminds me again of Mesopotamian myths and also in the Bible, right? Because we have Jonah, who was swallowed by the great fish, you know, for 3 days. And obviously a similar image, isn't it, of being dissolved into a larger reality. Because at the time he was running away from his duties and trying to hide from them. But you can't hide right. from this stuff, right? And he was integrated oh. into a larger truth. And, of course, once he came out of the whale, you know, he was ready to do the work of the Lord, you know, because he understood a greater reality, and of course he forgot again, but as we all do, you know, we get it and we forget it and then we get it and forget about it. But like you said, every day is a new unfoldment, isn't it? A remembrance. We have to go into this symbolic court of the goddess every single day, basically.
So if he spent 3 days in the whale and then he forgot about it, that just kind of makes me sad.
Well, he did do his duty. He did go to Nineveh, you know, and because he was going in the opposite direction. He did remember the truth. But then when he got to Nineveh, he didn't want to bless them, you know.
It was just his
humanness, you know, just got the better of him. But his spirit was willing. The flesh was weak, as they say. Yeah.
Well, hopefully this process covers the weakness of the flesh.
Absolutely.
As the courage that's required to stand up, particularly at this time on the planet, and yet it's needed more than ever. But if you spent, like some people I know, I've done this in Egypt, where they've spent 9 days in the belly. And I've done it on the phone on video chats where they've spent 3 weeks in the belly. And then I leave it open-ended for them to complete as they wish, because sometimes people just aren't ready to come out because they feel so safe and they continue to learn while they're in there.
Well, folks, if this has piqued your interest, you want to find out more about this journey that Nikki takes people on. Nikki, what is your website if people want to contact you?
My website is either NikkiScully.com or ShamanicJourneys.com.
Right, okay. And the book's available as well, right? And
right. Our bookstore is HathorsMirror.com. And that tells you, well, both the website and the bookstore tells you all about the classes and the different writers that I recommend, the different books that I recommend. And because I'm a Bear and Company author, then all the Inner Traditions and Bear and Company books that are on my site, I can give, if you buy multiples, I can give discounts.
Right, okay, good. And then you're still busy, right? What have you got coming up?
Well, I'm actually less busy than ever. I'm trying to retire. So I have a class in South Florida. I said my retirement would include anything that would take me near my grandchildren. So I'm
there we go.
Called the Mystical Moon in near Fort Myers in Bonita Springs. And then I'll visit my kids in Miami, where they're...
Oh, lovely. There we go. That's important. Yeah.
And starting the weekend after Martin Luther King's holiday, or the Monday after that, or whenever, sometime in January, I'll be doing In the Belly of the Goddess via my Zoom room, which is a video chat, which is a wonderful way to do it. I'll do it in 6 sessions, and they're each, you know, 2 to 2.5 hours, and we pretty much go through the whole thing, and then I'm also available. And we have a forum. If you write to us and say you're interested, then we'll send you an invitation to the forum so that you can talk to other people who are going through the process if you want to just use the book. and ask questions that way.
And all right. Wonderful stuff. Let me tell you a little bit about what's happening at our end, and then we'll say goodbye to Nikki. Big things are happening at Unity Online Radio, folks. We're reimagining the whole network, building a huge new studio, and as a result of that, we'll be just doing encore shows for about a month or so, beginning middle of December. So next week will be our last live show for a month or so while we retool. So exciting. I'll be sad not to be on the air for a while, but I know it's going to be awesome when we do return. So keep a weather eye on that, and we'll let you know what's happening. Next week, my final guest for the season is Armin Zeta, and he's going to talk to me about his book, The Forgotten Art of Love. So that's a good topic to end our series this year on world spirituality. But right now, I want to thank Nikki Scully for being my guest. It's been a fascinating hour and a particularly intriguing meditation leading us into the halls of Sekhmet. So thank you, Nikki.
Thank you, Paul. I've really enjoyed it.
And thanks for listening, everybody. I'll talk to you next week. All right, have a good one. All right, bye-bye now.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
Of spiritually conscious living start now. For a time-tested method to live with purpose and release your infinite potential, tune in to the Yoga Hour, Living the Eternal Way, with Yogacharya Ellen Grace O'Brien, every Thursday morning at 10 a.m. Central, 8 a.m. Pacific, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Sometimes life can seem like a jigsaw puzzle. Even if we think we have a clear picture of what we want, we may become overwhelmed in our efforts to fit all the pieces together. Although each of our lives may look different on the outside, what we are all striving to create is the same, peace of mind. We mistakenly think that peace will be ours once we have fit all the pieces of our lives into place. But peace isn't dependent on outer circumstances, and it's not something that must be finished. It's a work in progress within each of us. If I want to picture peace clearly, I look within myself. The peace I've been missing is there. Peace can begin with me.
To find a Unity Church near you, please visit our website at www.unity.org.
God is formless, yet takes many forms. What goes around comes around. Chant the name of the Lord and be free. No one comes to the Father except through me. Ever been confused by the variety and apparent contradiction within world religions? Join Reverend Paul John Roach every Tuesday for insight into those principles held in common by all the great religious traditions in world spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions. Using discussions, interviews, humor, insight, and practice practical advice, we will clarify the confusion and reveal simple yet profound truths. Call in with your questions and ideas and help break down the barriers that separate us from one another. That's World Spirituality with Paul John Roach, Tuesdays at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, here on Unity FM, the voice of an awakening world.
Be sure to grab the latest issue of Unity Magazine and read the interview with Ram Dass, the iconic spiritual leader of the 60s. He's now focused on how to age consciously. Spiritual author Thomas More reflects on grumpy old men and women. And Barbara Bowen writes a touching story about her experience as a caregiver to her mother with dementia. To subscribe to Unity Magazine, go to unity.org and click on Publications.
Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry, where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.